history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Okay, next subject is the muscular system. And first of all, let me point out that we do have pictures of the major muscles again. And this is an anterior view of major muscles. And here's a posterior view of major muscles. And once again, like I talked about last time, I'm not going to go over each and every one of these muscles in lecture. These are for our lab activities. And again, as mentioned before, you can take a look at the ones that I expect you to know by going to the photo exam pictures on the website. So they will be there. Okay, in terms of muscles, let me first talk about the function of muscles. One major one is to do with movement of the body. The ability to move around takes muscles. Another one, maintenance of posture. In other words, the ability to basically stand up requires muscles. It actually requires muscles, some coordination of those muscles so that you aren't leaning too far to the right. If these muscles are tighter than the ones on the left, or leaning too far to the left, if the ones on the left are tighter than the right, that coordination is provided by the nervous system, which is going to be our next subject. Respiration, breathing, in and out. Breathing requires muscular activity. Major muscle involved is the diaphragm. There's also the production of body heat. When you move muscles, kind of a byproduct of that is heat. So therefore, by moving muscles, I know you know when you exercise a bunch and you get all warm. So the use of muscles does provide does produce body heat. Another one, muscles constrict. It provide constriction for blood vessels. And I discussed this once before, that there's a layer of muscle around blood vessels, and when that muscle constricts, the blood vessel gets smaller, the purpose of which is to shunt blood to different parts of the body. And lastly, the rhythmic contractions of the heart. The heart is basically kind of one big muscle, so obviously the function of the heart depends also on muscles. Some properties of muscles. What characteristics do they have? I got four of them here. One of them is that they can contract. And that is the case. Muscles can contract, which means they get shorter, and we'll talk about how that works in a little bit here, but they can contract. Keep in mind, they can't push out. They can contract, which is an active activity, but then they can only relax. They cannot push out. Contract, relax, contract, relax. They are excitable, they have excitability, and they are excited for the most part, and we're going to talk about it today also. What we're talking about for the most part is they are excitable by neural activity. They get their excitability from neurons. Actually, what is called an action potential is an impulse, a nervous impulse, that stimulates a muscle to contract. They can be elongated. They are extensible. In other words, a muscle sitting right here, you can pull it, and it's got a little bit of elasticity in it. So you can actually, it is what is said to be, what that's called is extensibility. It can be extended. And lastly, specifically, elasticity is that if it becomes extended, if you pull it a little bit, it is elastic in the fact that it will recoil to its original shape. Okay, as mentioned a moment ago, a major function of the muscles is to provide movement. Well, they provide movement in conjunction with the skeletal system. And there's a relationship between muscles and the skeletal system, which again account for that type of movement. Now and then, when talking about this subject, it can be referred to as the musculoskeletal system. Some of the characteristics of this are that movable bones are held one to another by ligaments. Movable bones are held one to another by ligaments. And it doesn't show it here, but here's two bones. They are held together by ligaments. Muscles are attached to bones by tendons. And this is shown up here. Here's a muscle attached to the bone by a tendon, which is also a form of connective tissue, by the way. Contractions generally move distal bones relative to proximal bones. And good example up here, the muscle activity here is moving the distal portion of the arm relative to the proximal portion of the arm. Attachment at the proximal bone, like up here, is referred to as the origin. An attachment to the distal bone is referred to as insertion, or the insertion point. Okay, a couple generalities to do with muscles, and I mentioned this before, but it's kind of important. I think people have a little bit the wrong idea. Muscles always contract. They do not extend. They contract and they relax. Those that contract and pull inward are called flexors. This is creating flexion. It is a flexor. This would be a flexor. And those that contract and pull outward are called extensors. So therefore, this would be extension. It is this muscle that is contracting to pull this the forearm in an extended position, and therefore it's referred to as an extensor. So in this particular case, one more. This is a flexor. It's pulling the bone inward. This one's an extensor. It's pulling the bone outward. I'm going to talk for a moment about the three types of muscle cells. We discussed this before when we talked about in the organization of humans, but I'm going to go over this one more time about muscle cells because that's what we're talking about. First of all, the three different types are skeletal muscle cells, there's smooth muscle cells, and there's cardiac muscle cells. Okay. In terms of skeletal muscle cells, a very notable characteristic of them is that they are under voluntary control. I can think, well, I'm going to move my arm, and I move my arm. So therefore, those are skeletal muscle cells that make up skeletal muscle tissue. A muscle fiber, this we can see a muscle fiber here, and actually it's a muscle cell. It can also be called a muscle fiber. They are multinucleated, more than one nucleus in each cell. Under a microscope, and right here, you can see they appear striated. They have striations. And also, they are cylindrical. In other words, they look like a cylinder. And skeletal muscle cells form bundles. Just like this right here, forms a bundle. Next, we have smooth muscle cells and smooth muscle tissue. It is under autonomic control. In other words, it's automatic. It's not voluntary. It has to do with like muscles that surround my stomach, and they're going like this all the time, and muscles that surround those blood vessels I just talked about, where they constrict without your thinking about it. So they are, those are autonomic, or sounds kind of like automatic, but the word is autonomic. They have a single nucleus in each cell. They are not striated or don't appear striated. They're not striated, actually. And the ends, they're kind of tapered. In other words, they're kind of a cylinder, but then they taper at each end. And they form sheets. They don't form bundles. And you can picture around a blood vessel, for example, it would be a sheet of muscle around that, not a bundle. The third type is cardiac muscle cells, which form cardiac muscle tissue. And it is a portion of them in the pacemaker of the heart. The sinoatrial node, a region of the sinoatrial node, which is referred to as the pacemaker, they are self-stimulating. They beat on their own. If you take them, out, and as long as they have nutrients and oxygen and so forth, they will continue to beat on their own. There is a single nucleus in each cell. They also, like skeletal muscle cells, they appear, they have striations in them. They are irregular in shape, as can be seen here, kind of irregularly shaped. And they form a mass. They don't form sheets, and they don't form bundles. They form a mass, and you can picture your heart's kind of a mass of muscle cells. Okay, so that's muscle cells. Now, how do muscle cells relate to a muscle? And this is like levels of organization. So we start out this is a muscle cell right here. And within the muscle cell, here's the membrane of the cell itself. Within the muscle cell, we're going to find certain structures that we're going to talk about in a little bit as we talk about the impulse, how this muscle cell is going to contract, and how it relates to the impulse that's going to cause it to contract. So we've got a muscle cell. Muscle cells are bundled into groupings, as can be seen up there, and those are referred to as fasciculi. One of them is a fasciculus, and these are fasciculi. Those groupings of fasciculi than are found within the muscle itself. So the level of organization, we've got the cell bundled into fasciculi, bundled into the muscle itself. Okay? Actually, while this picture's up, let me take note of a few things of the structures within the cell. There's little packets in there called the sarcoplasmic reticulum. And the sarcoplasmic reticulums, number of the little packets, contain calcium ions. Then there are myofibrils. And myofibrils are what are actually going to contract. It's these myofibrils shown right here that are going to be the first thing to contract. And it's divided, a myofibril is divided into smaller sections called sarcomeres. So in terms of contraction, the first thing that happens, well, an impulse, a nervous impulse causes this contraction to happen. But the first thing that contracts is the sarcomere contracts, which causes the myofibril to contract, which causes the cell to contract, which causes the fasciculus to contract, which causes the muscle to contract. So that's the level of organization we have in terms of how cells relate to muscles and how contractions, the levels of organization in terms of contractions. Now, let's take a look at what a contraction actually is. How does a contraction occur? First of all, here is a muscle cell. Now we're down to the cell level here, which are found within the fasciculi. And within this, as we saw just a moment ago, there's these little packets called the sarcoplasmic reticulum. They contain calcium ions. And there are the myofibrils, which are those sections, fibers that are divided into units, into different units, called sarcomeres. Okay, so in terms of how what causes a contraction. The first thing that happens is this muscle cell impinging on muscle cells are the synapse, the terminal points of neurons. They don't actually touch the cell. There's a small gap called the synaptic gap between this particular neuron and the cell membrane itself. When an impulse comes down, and today I'm just going to say impulse. It's actually called an action potential. And we're going to talk a lot about action potentials and exactly what they are in our next section when we talk about the nervous system. But today, I'm just going to say either action potential or impulse. So an action potential or impulse comes down to the terminal point of the neuron itself. The neuron then releases a neurotransmitter. And actually, at a neuromuscular junction, which is what this is, there's a neuron, here's the muscle cell, so it's a neuromuscular junction, the neurotransmitter is always acetylcholine. So acetylcholine, it crosses that synaptic gap, that little gap right there. And it stimulates the cell itself to then generate an action potential. And by the way, action potentials run along the membranes. They don't run inside of a cell. It's coming along the membrane here, and when it generates an action potential in this muscle cell, it's going to run along the membrane. So now we have this impulse, this action potential came down here. If this is skeletal muscle cell, it's something you thought about. It came from a region of your brain to do this action, to contract this muscle. The impulse came down and generated an impulse in the membrane of the muscle cell. So now we got this action potential impulse running along the membrane of the muscle cell. And when it gets to, actually up there, it's showing the action potential running along the membrane. When it gets to certain areas in the muscle cell called T-tubules, these are areas where the membrane, does it just get, it kind of, it goes down. Shown right there. So the action potential will go down these T-tubules and come in very close proximity to those sarcoplasmic reticulums. Here's these little packets that contain calcium. The sarcoplasmic reticulum. Upon this action potential, the effect of the action potential on the sarcoplasmic reticulum is to stimulate the sarcoplasmic reticulum to release calcium ions that are contained within it. So it releases calcium ions. The calcium ions then are inside the cell, and they become infused into the myofibrils. So let's take a little better look at the inside of a myofibril. Okay, this is kind of a cross-section or schematic of what's inside a myofibril. Keep in mind, it's divided, a myofibril's long, divided into units called sarcomeres. So this is showing a sarcomere, one of those units here. There'd be another one here, and another one here, and so forth, to make up a long myofibril. Within the sarcomere, there are two proteins. There's actin, shown in the blue here, and there is myosin, shown in green up there. In a blown-up version of the actin right here, we can see some component parts to it. The actin molecule are these little blue spheres, and covering it or running along it is another protein called tropomyosin. And what tropomyosin does is, in a resting state, it covers these little areas of the actin, which are referred to as the active sites. What that calcium is going to do, it is going to cause the tropomyosin to move away from the active sites, so they no longer cover the active sites of the actin. The myosin over here look like a little golf club, sort of. You know, a little thing on them like this, like that. Okay? And you can see up there the relative position of the myosin to the actin, which is right here, and here's the actin, and here's the myosin here. When the tropomyosin is removed from the active sites, which was caused by the influx of calcium ions from the sarcoplasmic reticulum, it opens up the active sites on the actin. And what happens is, with the use of ATP, the myosin filament starts ratcheting, going like this. And it grabs, get my watch out of the way there, it grabs an active site here and ratchets. And then grabs another active site and ratchets. And grabs another one and ratchets. And brings these two sides together. That is why the sarcomere shortens. And therefore the myofibril shortens and so forth and so on. Okay? Let's take another look at that. I think I've got another slide here which shows this. Okay. Again, back up on top, the sarcomere. The calcium shows up. The active sites of the actin are exposed. Here's the myosin. Here's the little head. What's going to happen is it's like this, and then it is going to latch onto an active site, and then with the use of ATP, which is the energy source for cells, it is going to ratchet, as shown right here. So again, the idea basically is the actin's on both sides, and we're going to ratchet this way. These are going to ratchet this way, and it's going to come together, and that sarcomere is going to shorten. This picture shows that activity. It shows up on top, the actin and the myosin. It shows here's one sarcomere. Here's another sarcomere. There'd be another. There'd be another. And as these things, as I say, as they ratchet, it brings the two sides, the actin from this side and the actin from this side within the sarcomere, closer and closer together until at which point they are together and cannot shorten anymore. Here's another way of looking at it. Okay, here is the muscle cell where it is kind of got an opposite of what I expect here, but anyway, whereby there's a gap here. The sarcomere is as large as it can get. The myosin filaments, the active sites become available. The myosin starts going like this, starts dragging the actin both ways, gets shorter, muscle gets shorter. And finally, it gets to the point at which it can't get any shorter, and we have the greatest amount of muscle contraction. Now, you might say, so a muscle, I can either really strongly contract this muscle, or I can weakly contract that muscle just a little bit. What's the difference? In terms of the activity of the sarcomere, it's either an all or none reaction. Either if calcium shows up, this is going to happen. It's going to get as short as it can. The muscle fiber is going to get as short as it can. The muscle cell is going to get as short as it can, so forth. So what's the difference between a weak response or a strong response as far as the muscle goes? It is the fact that it's how many muscle cells are involved. It's not that one of them isn't doing all it can. They're all doing, if they contract, they're doing as much contraction as they can do. But if you've got just a few muscle cells involved, then you get a weak reaction. if you involve all the muscle cells, or a great many of them, you get a much stronger reaction. So it's the number of muscle cells involved, not the activity of each muscle cell unto itself. Okay, by the way, it is these what are called Z lines right here, the ends of the sarcomere, that give the skeletal muscle cell and cardiac muscle cell, it gives it those striations. What you're looking at is these Z lines, is within the myofibrils, you're looking at these division points, and that's why you see striations. The as we mentioned, a smooth muscle cell doesn't have striations. So what is going to anchor, in other words, what is going to anchor these myofilaments? Let's take a look at smooth muscle cells. And again, kind of the nature of it we talked about before, a single nucleus kind of tapered at the ends and so forth, but we don't see striations. What there is within smooth muscle cells to anchor the ends of the sarcomeres is, since we don't have these Z lines, we don't have these striations, what there is in smooth muscle cells is there's dense material scattered throughout the cell, which are called dense bodies. So here's a dense body here within the smooth muscle cell. Here's a dense body here. So the sarcomere, this is located, is anchored, or the myofibril composed of sarcomeres are anchored by these, at the ends, by these dense bodies. Since they don't have the same construction as skeletal or cardiac muscle cells, it is these dense bodies. That's why you don't see those striations within smooth muscle cells. Leaves us with one other category of muscle cell, which is cardiac muscle cells. And I don't think I don't have a picture of that here. Cardiac muscle cells, again, as I say, some of them, those found in the sinoatrial node, the pacemaker of the heart, are self-stimulating. And we're going to talk about, I know the book does it this way and I'm going to do it this way, we're going to talk about the contractions of cardiac muscle cells when we talk about the cardiovascular system. And that's actually not going to be until ANP2, so you'll just have to wait for that one. Okay, that is it for today, and that's it for today.
History, don't know much biology, don't know much about a science book, don't know much about the French I took.